everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about the second half of... Oh, how did I not look at the episode title?
Flicker.
It's dumb, right? Flicker, right? It's Flicker, which is definitely relevant to the second half of the episode.
Like the horse movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So, before we get into this one, since this is going to be like largely a two halves episode, probably worth doing a little bit of a recap of what happened last time, just so we can, if anything, fully anchor how these really should have been two episodes, huh, Liz? You wanna take it away?
Yeah. We stopped at a point where the show kind of hits you with a cement brick wall to remind you that you're actually watching a pre-established TV show, and it thrusts you back into that TV show kind of abruptly. So we don't typically go over, like, when we do these two-parters, we don't typically go in-depth over, but I feel like this one specifically, because of how much of a splash of cold water where we cut it is, I feel like we would benefit from that, and the listeners would also benefit from that. So a very quick TLDR, too long, did not read. There were two kind of zombie-ish things in the walls of a boarded-up part of the hotel that recently got cracked open like a pinata, because they're demoing that floor to make a fashion thing.
One of which is played by the same actor as Tristan and is dressed a lot like Tristan, comma, is not Tristan.
It's almost impossible. But, to be clear, it's almost impossible to tell that in the first scene because they are so zombified. We will get more.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get more of this guy later. And then it's like, oh, that's just Tristan, parentheses, 1920s edition, alternate costume Tristan. But when we first meet them, they just look like zombies, which is a horrific idea that we're now adding zombies to this.
I think like the only like kind of clue that they're in something else is like, I think they drink some construction guy's blood, you know, like they do the vampire neck bite thing, but like they don't look like the vampires or the whatevers that we've been dealing with on the show. So it's like,
it does.
What the heck are these?
It does beg a lot of questions about what vampirism does to the human body in this specific area of
and how
expertise.
It keeps you alive and you're immortal, but also you can become like a mummy.
Yeah, you do age, I guess, to the point where you could just like fall apart and die, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know where the threshold for that is.
I don't want to accuse American Horror Story of ripping off of Interview with a Vampire, but that's territory that covers. Because what happens in that movie at one point is you're not supposed to drink blood from the dead, and they trick Lestat, Tom Cruise's character, into drinking blood from the dead, and they think it'll might kill him, but it just makes him like really old and weak and stuff, you know? So like, that's not exactly what's happening here. But it's still one of those things where I'm like, oh, come on, this is basically the same thing, you know, but provided they're vampires.
I think you'll find that American Horror Story has never stolen any ideas or premises from any other media property.
Never.
I shouldn't have said anything. I don't know why I could possibly think to.
That's a bit of a reach, I think. I don't think American Horror Story has pulled from another media source.
Jumping to conclusions as usual, B.
Maybe this show is just too smart for all of us.
I'm sorry, Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk, for my transgressions. But
they're listening to this like, finally, thank you. Someone sticks up for the little guy. So zombies show up, opening sequence plays. So this is the next scene that happens is the only scene where we really get any John, who is, remember, like kind of the main character of this season.
Ostensibly.
Yeah. And he is
the closest, yeah.
He's like checked himself into a regular hospital for generic mental health issues after he punched his coworker. Because he's too lost in the sauce about his serial killer detective work, and he's like kind of gonzo. And I guess the final straw that really sent him over the edge was seeing his wife and kid in a glass coffin in the hotel basement. And so he went back to work, and they're like, you don't work here anymore because you're bad at being a detective. And he's like, no, and then punches his coworker. And they're like, you got to go, brother. It's time for you to go to the hospital TM, and so he's at the hospital TM, and it makes it really obvious that, like, clearly John has decided that he wants to go to this hospital because he has an ulterior motive, which we will get to in our episode today. But it's important that you remember that he has checked himself in under the pretense that he is potentially hostile and violent, and mentally unwell.
Into a regular hospital. Yeah. Regular hospital for, like, cuts and broken bones. Yeah.
Which, it's not to say that sometimes hospitals don't have a mental health ward. It's just that that is not a part of the regular hospital. It is a separate
floor.
That's
not the preferential check-in. Like, if you, for example, punched a coworker and they were taking you in as an emergency, they probably wouldn't take you to regular hospital.
They probably, frankly, would not ask you where you wanted to go. You would just get taken. They would just take you to a location.
So, jail or... I'm thinking hospital. Okay, all right, hospital it is. But this time, okay? But
yeah.
Next time you punch a cop, hey.
Then they're like, no, we can't take him to jail. That's where he wanted to be. We're trying to get him out of jail. We're trying to get him out of this establishment. We can't take him to jail. He keeps trying to get back in here.
Maybe that's why he's, like, the best detective, because he did reverse psychology and was like, take me to jail. And I'm like, no. Nice try. We're like, going to the hospital. The mental
me
hospital.
Once. Fool me once, John Detective Man. Shame on you. Yeah, so that is literally the last time we see John for a really long chunk of time. And then there's a roughly 40-minute long, lengthy, like, flashback sequence, because when Lady Gaga's character sees that the hole is open, she starts having, like, PTSD flashbacks. I don't know why this triggers a flashback in her, but she's, like, scared.
And they have Kathy Bates, like, remark, like, whoa, you look afraid for once, which, like, doesn't really make sense given who is getting out of the what. Like, she shouldn't be afraid. She should be like, oh, sick. I thought they were dead.
The only other real takeaway from the lead up to that is that Marcy, the racist real estate agent, makes a reappearance, unfortunately, and she does get turbo eaten by the zombies, which does unfortunately mean she will likely return as a ghost, which is unfortunate for all of us. But she also got eaten. So then we get the really long flashback sequence. And when I say really long, I mean it's most of the episode, which is why we had to split this episode into two parts, because there is so much that happens after this in such a short amount of time that it deserves its own episode of podcast. However, it is not like a very substantial amount of stuff as far as plot goes.
It's also largely disconnected. So it would just feel very, it would really be just pivoting and being like, so all that stuff we just talked about for 40 minutes, okay, forget that for now.
Yeah.
Like, we're moving on.
It is almost exclusively not connected to the whole big flashback sequence. Yeah. So it feels
more or less,
different episode.
We get a lot of Lady Gaga character flashback. We establish that the beautiful, perfect man she loved was not James March. It was this other guy who was a real guy.
Rudolph Valentino,
and he was the one who was the originator of the vampire curse, because he got it from, like, the director of Nosferatu or whatever.
Who had a vampire
orgy,
yes.
You're so hot. Come get vampire mode. You're so hot. And then he'd do it. And then he's like, okay, great. And that's really all that's resolved, is, like, those two people exist. That's who Lady Gaga actually loves. That's why James March isn't a vampire and is a ghost.
Well, to be clear, because you said Nosferatu's director, you forgot to mention the hot lady. There's a hot lady married to Rudolfo Valentino, who is also a vampire. Those are the two people that Lady Gaga loves, not the weird, horny, real guy. The real guy might not have been horny, but in this show, they make him horny. The weird, horny director of Nosferatu is not involved. There was a flashback and a flashback and a flashback.
He's
off. It was very, it was very confusing. He's the guy who did the vampire stuff to the two hot people who are in a thruple with Lady Gaga and make her a vampire.
This, again, is like being like, huh, I wonder where Darth Vader is from, and then spending a whole hour being like, he was a little bored, he was very sad. Like, I don't actually care. Thank
right,
you.
Right.
Vampires. sure, I believe you, man. I don't care how we got to the hot vampires. Just show me the hot vampires. What are we doing,
well,
man?
You know, it's like again, I don't want to accuse anyone of ripping off of Interview with a Vampire, which is a period piece about a vampire's origin story or anything in the context of an interview. So I won't continue saying it, except this is what they're fucking doing. But anyway. I think the wife is also a real person. The actress,
which this is the guy who's played by the guy who played Tristan. Finn Wittrock is now a second character after killing off his first character, Tristan. Now he is in it as Rudy, the hot vampire man, and the one of the three parts of the Lady Gaga vampire thruple. So TLDR, that guy faked his death. And then Lady Gaga finds out that he's not actually dead. And they're like, yeah, no, we did this because now we're vampires and we want you to be vampires with us. But in the interim, when she thought they were both gone, she married James March, who stopped her from killing herself in his hotel. And she hates him, but like still married him because she's like, well, if I'm going to be sad, I'm going to be sad and rich, which honestly, fair. And then she found out he was doing, like, serial killings, and he's like, uh-oh. And then she's like, no, no, it's cool. I'm into it now, even though I'm just a mousy little lady from the Midwest.
Literally described as a pet by the other two members of the thruple. So, like, real bad look to go from that to like, actually, I would love to murder people recreationally.
Yeah, I like it when you kill people and that you're a weird little freak. That's cool. And then when she decides to go with her vampire lovers, or like reunites with them, rather, James March somehow is magically also there in the catacombs with them. And sees this, and then that will come back later on. But that catches us up to where we are currently. That was a 40-minute flashback sequence, unbroken. And maybe this is why they always break up sequences like this in this show, because it hard cuts 40 minutes of that, and then it hard cuts to a brightly lit fluorescent shot, and I mean as fluorescent as it can possibly be, of John's face.
I'm John. I'm in the hospital now. It's me, John. I'm still here. Hey, did you forget about me?
This scene is genuinely the most effective jump scare they have ever had in American Horror Story, because it is such a stark contrast to the 40 minutes of like sepia tone, black and white kind of flashback sequence we've been in.
Two people doing murders with, hello, my baby, hello, my darling, hello, my ragtime girl. And then just immediately, I'm John Detective in the hospital, and I'm here in the hospital to find somebody.
And here is the literal closest tight shot of my face and my bright ass blue eyes being lit up by every fluorescent light we had on set, possibly shoved up my face. It is insane. It's blown out. The shot sucks. It's so jarring. It feels like a Saw movie from like the early 2000s in the way that it's framed. It's just bizarre. And that's why we chose to split the episode here, because it is such a shift in tone. It feels like hitting a cement wall going 60 miles an hour. It is such an abrupt change in pace.
Would you say it's almost like going from watching Interview with a Vampire into watching just like halfway through the film Seven out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Movie Speed, for the hell of it. You know what I mean? It's just like a really, really distant thing.
A Tool music video, even. Just something very like jarring. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's in the hospital, and now we're reminded that John is actually probably the main character of this show. And John is kind of just like meandering about the hospital, reading a book, which as
just
I
hanging out.
Yeah, I mentioned this in the last episode. You don't get to do that if the reason you got put in the hospital was that you were checked in for like a mental health crisis and also
for
a violent
outburst and being a threat to yourself and others explicitly. Yeah, like, you know, discharging a firearm a couple feet from your daughter for no discernible reason.
Yeah.
Fine.
and like abandoning your child for long periods of time. Yeah. You don't get to, even if you weren't violent.
Okay. I thought my terrible wife was taking care of her. I forgot how much she fucking hates my daughter.
You know what? That's actually fair. Although he should know by now, because she did outright say, I don't love you and Scarlett as much as Holden.
Neither of you stink the right way. I'm not into it.
I need my lavender-smelling baby. I don't care about the other one. Yeah. And so you don't get to just, like, walk around. Even if you didn't do a violence, you are still... you're pretty regimented to specific areas that are specific to the mental health part of the hospital. You don't get to just kind of, like, walk around in wherever you want of the hospital. Just like, huh, cool hotel. That's not how it works. But he is, and nobody cares. And he walks past like a restricted ward. So they definitely have different wards in this hospital. And he's like listening to a guard giving like explicit details of like a fucked up and evil murder to a nurse who is, I assume, assigned to that ward. So maybe she would already know, but like they're talking pretty loud because someone has to give, the audience the information. And he's like, yeah, the guard, I mean, is like, yeah, the fucked up evil guy we got in that ward is, oh, he's so evil and scary and he did all this awful evil stuff. And the nurse is like, oh no, that's so tantalizing and was scandalous. And John's like, I gotta get in that ward. And then it's kind of like obvious that like this was John's plan, that when John heard that they had someone in custody, he found out during the scuffle because he saw like a piece of paper that said that they were holding the person at that hospital, which is why he picked this hospital. And that was his big plan, which is nothing. This is nothing.
Especially not an American Horror Story where like anybody can just walk up to a hospital and be like, I need to take someone. And they're like, yeah, all right.
Yeah. Like,
every season has someone going to either, I don't know, an asylum, for example, and just being like, I would like to rent a baby. And them just being like, yeah, take one.
Yeah. You
got it. Yeah, we got, so many of them in there.
Sign here. Yeah.
Pick one you like. We don't even care which one you take, frankly. Which one do you want? If you act fast enough, we'll give you two.
One time this one made a noise like a goat. Do you want that one? We think it's cursed.
This one flew out of its mom's hoo-ha and killed the nurse when it was born. Do you want that one?
You'd be amazed how many of these babies killed people during delivery. It's like more than two.
And not
which
the
is
mom.
Nuts.
Not even the mom. Like other people in the room. It's crazy.
Yeah, the surgeon. Yeah, the mom, the surgeon, the delivery assistant. Yeah, everyone involved. The police nearby.
And if you want a better description, a lot of them match like famous movies and things. And that way you can see exactly what you're dealing with. But, you know.
Yeah, you want like the Omen baby? We got like a The Omen baby. Maybe a Rosemary's baby. Yeah. Yeah.
Got a ring tape here for the hell of it. I'll just give that to you extra, pal. You know, like what not?
We got that little kid who meows in The Grudge. Like we got all sorts of kids here. Just take your pick.
Well, it's not like you were... I'm actually looking for a full collection. I'm looking for a full play set of Children of the Corn. Oh, you're not going to believe it? We have the new vampire variant of that shit. Oh, no way!
Yeah, we haven't checked in with them in two episodes, even though they're probably wreaking havoc on the city. We have not checked in on those guys in like two episodes, so who knows what they've been getting up to in the last 24 hours.
There's like 50 of them little shits all hopped up on hormones and fruit roll-ups. It's going to be a nightmare out there.
They've got vampire measles. It's a whole deal. I'm sure other people in this city are having a hell of a time right now. Speaking of fucked up and evil children in the hospital. So John does break in. He like knocks the guard out. I don't even remember how he does that, but he knocks the guard out, which kind of illustrates how much of a not real hospital this is. And he knocks the guard out and no one stops him, and he gets into the restricted ward, which only had one guard, I guess. And you might be thinking, who could they possibly have? Surely it's either a character we've already met or it's gonna be like some guy. It's not. It is a little blonde girl who I think I am not going to check, but I think we have seen with Lady Gaga's little child posse in the hotel before. Because there's been like three of them this whole time, like Holden, another little blonde boy, and then a blonde girl. And I think the blonde girl is this one, but I'm not sure.
The problem is, who the fuck knows at this show? Because it's like, you know, normally you'd be like, that's absolutely significant. But here they're like, fuck it, Finn Rintwa can be two people. It's fine. You know yeah. what I mean? And it's like, what the hell?
Yeah,
like,
there are two characters that both are love interests to Lady Gaga, one of which she is obsessed with. The later she is also obsessed with, but in a different way. And she will not mention that they look the same even once. And it'll drive Ty Tuesday fucking crazy.
Yeah, she never even like mentions it to the second guy. She's never even like, wow. Wow, you look a lot like somebody I used to know. She never even like grazes that topic.
She mentioned, she's like, yeah, the guy I met, the hottest guy. I loved him so much. He was so hot. No one ever will be close to as hot as he was. As she looks at the same man. It's crazy, dude.
Who also looks like a famous silent film actor. Maybe some old person might know him. No, it doesn't matter. Anyway.
And that would be really funny if Tristan, like, retroactively had like, a lot of lines that were like, yeah, people are always telling me I look like Rudolph Valentino. It's crazy.
Whoever that is.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, you know, yeah.
especially, the thing is, they keep doing this where they keep setting themselves up for very specific rakes that only they could step on. Not only are there two characters that look identical, played by the same man, that serve the same purpose in this show, it's also a show where people are fucking immortal. So it would not be a stretch of the imagination for her to see that person, Tristan, and be like, that's my fucking vampire boyfriend from 100 years ago. He just didn't age.
Oh, do you mean?
Because he's a fucking vampire.
Do you mean how, like, that's going to happen in the near future? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. yeah, it's... That's a specific rake that only they could set up for themselves, because it's completely avoidable if he was just played by a different actor. But for some reason, they're like, no, we need Finn Wittrock. We couldn't get another actor. No one else would do this. So instead, we have Finn Wittrock playing both characters. Anyway, we'll get back to that in just a few minutes. There's a little girl in the psych ward / hospital.
Why is she there? You might ask. That's a great question. It's because she won't talk to the police, which is confusing for a child. That's
also bizarre that they would like take her to a psych ward, because like that is the thing, is he's like, why are you here? And she's like, oh, I wouldn't talk to the police. I saw the murder of the church guy that you ran in on, where it was like a mega church and they were like taking a lot of money, and then the Ten Commandments killer filled the guy full of coins. I was there, and I won't give the police any info. And I'm like, I don't think they send you to the psych ward for that. Usually I think they try to find your parents first. And it doesn't seem like they did that. Yeah. Which I think that's about the age she's like implied to be, for what it's worth. And then like we get a flashback sequence where she is at the church where the Ten Commandments killer is doing that specific murder. And like the security guard showed up to and almost busted the Ten Commandments killer, and I guess she thought he didn't have it handled on his own or her own, and she kills the security guard, which, you know, normal 10-year-old things. I don't think the police even know that she did that, but like they know she was there. And it's whatever. It's very confusing. In case it sounds confusing the way we're describing it, it's because it's confusing in the way it's presented in the show. This whole sequence is, it feels like I missed about 4 episodes that I didn't miss. And then she's like, yeah, I was also at the other Ten Commandments crimes. And then that activates John's almonds. And he's like, holy shit, you were at the Ten Commandments murders? No, first of all, no, you weren't. You're full of shit. I don't think any child has ever said the truth ever. Every time a little girl tells me something, I assume they're lying for some reason. I did this to my own daughter also. And then she's like, well, here's some details about the other crimes that no other people know. And then he's like, holy shit, you were there. Holy fuck. And at that point, I'm like, do we care? Like, as the audience, like, are we supposed to be like, holy shit, there was a kid there? What the fuck? Like, what are we supposed to think?
What are they going to do next? Have, like, a beagle show up and be like, also the beagle was in the room when he killed people. Which, like, all right, man, like, cool, I guess. Does that change anything? Like, he still is a guy who, like, is serial killing people, right? I feel like who else is there is kind of irrelevant.
I feel like there's no stakes in this plot point either. Like, we always see the murders after they happen. Nobody's in jeopardy for any, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, who gives a crap? Like, I'm dealing with vampires and with all this other.
Like, the serial killer has never threatened. He's never been like, John, I'm gonna fucking kill you next, man. Like, no, it's always like, he's like, hey, wanna see me leave a shit on the carpet? Be here this time. You're gonna love it.
Well, I think what they wanted from this, but the problem is they just didn't do it. They just used the framework for it and then just didn't do it, is I think they wanted us, the audience, to be like, wait a second. Is this kid the Ten Commandments killer? Holy shit, what's up with that? But, like, they didn't do that because she's immediately like, yeah, I was there when this other person was doing the murders. And they didn't, like, frame it in an ambiguous way where we might even consider that she was the killer, which would have been, like, it not a good plot point, but, like, it would have been like, oh, shit, like, okay, didn't expect the Ten Commandments killer to be a little girl. What's up with that? What's her deal? Why is she doing that? But they did it wrong and by immediately revealing that she's not.
And also, why did John wait till now to like, come see her? Like, when he was a cop in, like, the good police graces, he probably had all the time in the world. He'd be like, I want to question this, like, witness or whatever. But
he didn't know until he looked in the files and dramatically, like, threw one against the wall, and then the correct piece of paper fell out, and then, like, happened to show up in front of him.
Well, he was punching his coworker. That was critical.
What a terrible detective. Yeah. Like, oh, I missed this page. How about that? Like, you're solving a murder, dipshit. Like,
yeah. This is really, like, you're not a detective anymore. You're a cop because you did so bad. Like, you lose that. Yeah.
Also,
this dude never read, clearly.
That means that, like, she was there for, like, the first fucked up murder, the one where the guy got his beepus super glued in Bajanya, which feels like a fucked up thing to ask a 10-year-old to help with, frankly. I don't know what that's the biggest thing, is I don't know what they want us to even glean from this. Because if it was a thing where it was ambiguous and we're like, oh shit, is this the Ten Commandments killer? That at least at the, again, not, it's not a good plot point or twist.
Yeah,
but like,
I think the problem is that there's two outcomes for this, right? And it's one, there was a little girl nearby when all the killings happened, which, like, great. It's a little stupid. I don't really care. Or this girl is the Ten Commandments killer, which is, like, also very stupid. So, like, there's just no real outcome where I'm not just like, well, this is going to be fucking dumb.
It's stupid.
Whatever they do.
The one where she's the killer is stupid, but it's stupid in a way where I'm like, that's so fucking stupid that I want to see how they explain that it's true. Like, it's so
there's
dumb.
There's at least something there.
That I want to see what dumb bullshit they come up with to explain how this kid is the Ten Commandments killer and why she's doing this weird bullshit. But, like, they immediately throw that out the window as soon as we know her name. Because she's like, my name is Ren, and I have been at every Ten Commandments killing. And it's like, well, her being there isn't interesting. Like, again, there could have been a dog in the room. That doesn't mean anything to us. Like, who cares? but in this conversation, after he's like, holy shit, you are that. You were there. That's crazy. He's like, you're a lot like my daughter. I'm like, oh, the daughter, you don't know where she is right now? that's crazy. I'm like, how do you know this isn't her? You haven't seen her in a while.
You know what they're doing? I feel like they're doing that, like, you know, when, like, The Last of Us thing where it's like, he lost a kid, but maybe this is his surrogate daughter.
Yeah.
But it's like he just gave up. Like, they had one big fight, and it's like, well, need a new daughter character, and I guess you'll do.
Wow, you're like my daughter. I'm going to treat you exactly like I would treat my daughter. And then he leaves the hospital never to talk to Ren ever again.
Then he leaves the hospital, gets a gun, comes back, fires the gun near her, and then leaves.
Yeah.
Oh, you're pre-traumatized. This will go better.
Yeah. I don't even have to be the one to traumatize you. This is great. And you know about the thing I'm obsessed with, so we have something to bond over. I don't have that with my other kid. Yeah, and so this conversation, which is fucking insane, gets weirder because she starts to give us lore about her, which will be really funny in hindsight in about 10 minutes. But we get bizarre lore about her because I know that they're thinking that all of us, the audience, are like, oh, I gotta know what's up with this kid. We don't.
I can't have this character without, yeah, all the background details still, even though no one's doing that.
I need to know about this 10-year-old girl who just randomly showed up. And she's like, you're not like my dad. My dad was a fucking weirdo. My dad constantly said how when I grew up, he was going to marry me. And it's like, fucking okay, American Horror Story. Whatever.
Where are we going with this one, American Horror Story? Because
it's one of those things where, like, because how American Horror Story handles literally everything, as soon as she dropped that line, I'm like, there is 0% chance this goes well or anywhere constructive.
yeah, I was like, you can't do this.
Yeah, I'm like, American Horror Story, even better shows wouldn't handle this well. I know for a fact you're not going to do it. And she's like, yeah, my dad was weird and obsessed with me. And he said, as soon as I grew up, he was going to marry me. And he liked to drink like a lot. And I'm like, I feel like we could have literally just gone with he liked to drink a lot. And that would have been fine. Yeah.
And also then John would be like,
oh, shit.
Oh, your dad was an alcoholic. I wish I could do that. I keep trying, but I'm so bad at it.
On his own, or did his wife pressure him into it? I'm just curious. Yeah. Sorry.
Did you?
Maybe not. Sorry, Ren. You keep going. Never mind.
Give help.
Yeah, Ren. Did you ever tell him that he wasn't drinking enough? Did you ever consider maybe telling him to drink more? Yeah. So, and then she's like, so one day he was drinking, and he decided to go day drinking at the Hotel Cortez in 1986. Holy shit! It's 1986. That's so long ago. This kid must be a vampire. Anyway, they just randomly have the weird, creepy dad who was an alcoholic and decided to drink at the Hotel Cortez, which is the only important element of this story involving the dad. So the weird part about wanting to marry her has nothing to do with anything.
Also, fucking crazy place for an alcoholic to drink. Hotel bars are so goddamn expensive. Like, are you kidding me?
I mean, listen, you say that, right? But then again, somebody came in to do freaking heroin in this place.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Like, why is everyone going into, like...
I guess, yeah, I don't know why people are just like, the Hotel Cortez. Now, that seems like a place to get fucked up. Like, what?
Okay, so, I feel fairly strongly, this one doesn't even feel like a tinfoil hat. I feel like this is just them being bad at their jobs. I think pretty strongly that what it is the writers want you to associate, because it has similar, like, I don't know what to even call it, properties to Murder House. And because they've mentioned Murder House in like three of the episodes, I think they want you to apply the same dumbass, absolutely nothing logic that they applied to Murder House, which was that, oh, the house makes you evil because some places are just evil and they want you to be evil.
But he already was an alcoholic.
Yeah, but they want you to be like,
so did it just make him leave his daughter in the car?
Yeah, they're like, certain places just draw evil and sad people to them, and that's why only evil people end up at Murder House or whatever. Like, I think they want, which is dumb because this is a fucking anthology series, so like to apply the laws of that season to this season doesn't make any sense, nor should you ever. Even I this is my little soapbox that I get on all the time. When you're making even a sequel to a pre-established movie, even if it is blank 2 or blank 3, an entry in a series, there should be a minimum amount of information given to at least catch people up to speed in the most basic way, if it is relevant to the point. That way, if someone happens to watch that movie out of context, looking at you, Marvel movies, they know what's going on. Because sometimes it's hard to keep up with stuff like Star Wars or Marvel movies. There should be a minimum amount of baseline information provided very quickly. That way, people who maybe haven't seen all 27 other movies at least have a kind of an idea of what the rules of the universe are.
You mean you shouldn't have to watch three seasons of a cartoon to figure out why there's a coughing robot in the movie suddenly? Yeah, okay, yes. I'm behind that. Sure, yes, yeah.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
So for them to expect that, like, not only have we watched the other seasons of this show, but also that we remember that in Murder House, the one they keep referencing in this season and will continue to do so, that we were like, oh yeah, it was the house that made people like mad because they are ripping off Stephen King and his location-based horror about certain places attract broken, sad, and evil people because they feed off of that negative energy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember how they did that in season one.
Oh my God. You know what just hit me too? You know how this is hotel and there's like the vague Shining? The Shining was a big metaphor for alcoholism, uh-huh, and that's actually why King didn't love the Kubrick movie. But like here, rather than a metaphor, they just have the addiction demon.
Yep.
And like a literal alcoholic and stuff.
Correct.
Like they just skipped the subtext part of it and went, okay, sorry, I just made that revelation. Okay, anyway.
No,
yep,
yeah, this
sorry.
Season is just like, what if we did The Shining? What if people haven't seen The Shining and we did it? But what if we had vampires?
Interview with the Shining vampire. That's
and maybe
the
movie
yes.
Seven? I don't know. What if he's not an Ooh. Author and he's a detective instead, but the detective from the movie Seven?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's a Ten Commandments killer, which is seven, but three more, so better. Right?
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Okay. So, yeah, we got it.
See, okay. This is where their head was at when they were in the writer's room. We got there. We got there eventually. We saw the vision.
Yes.
But yeah, there. It's a flashback. It's 1986. The dad is day drinking and he locks the kid in a hot car. And she's like, oh, sick. I get to die in a hot car. At least I don't have to grow up and marry my dad? ? I think that's like the only reason they're like, yeah, she wants to kill herself at 10 years old. Because if she grows up, she's going to marry her dad? ? And she's like,
you
could
just tell an adult,
yeah,
like teacher or something, you know, but whatever.
Nope, I'd like to bake in this hot car, actually.
I think they realized after like Holden, when Lady Gaga was like, I saved Holden from a bad life. And it's like his dad took him to the boardwalk to ride around on the carousel. What the fuck are you talking about? They're like, okay, this one was, it was like so bad. Like she was like in a car, like a dog, and they locked it and the car was hot and her dad was going to marry her. And also the dad drank. Can Lady Gaga take this one now? And it's like, yeah, okay, man. Honestly, if I was at the World Series and the pitcher just threw a Christian baby at me, I'd slam that thing right out of the park. Like, I don't see why we need all this justification. Like, you can just be like, Lady Gaga is not a good person. She just takes kids sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, she's the antagonist. You could just be like, this lady's weird and takes kids.
Also, you know, I don't particularly want to focus on this weirdo dad and shit, but like, I also don't really get like, if you're like, it's like, I'm going to have a good Christian wedding with my daughter. And it's like, well, wait, why is it like, why are you doing the ceremony part of it? Like, you know, like what is that gaining you? Like, you must know this is wrong from another angle, right? But I don't know.
Like, yeah, so, man, they're not going to let you do that. Even like,
right?
Even like
yeah.
fucked up people aren't going to let you do that. Just legally, they're not going to let you do that. Also, by the time she is an adult, she's definitely just going to have left, for sure. But that's why when she's in the car, she's like, yay, finally, the sweet release of death in this hot car. And Lady Gaga's like, I save kids from bad parents. I'm here now, and it's the 80s, and I have big, crazy 80s hair and padded shoulders, so you know I'm from the 80s. And she, like, breaks the window and saves the kid like a dog from a hot car. And then that's the end of the flashback, and John's like, holy shit, so your evil and fucked up dad is the killer? And she's like, no, idiot, he died of cancer, like, 5 years later. Duh. Dummy.
Duh.
Thought you were a detective. So yeah,
clearly not.
The dad had nothing to do with anything. And I guess was just okay that Lady Gaga kidnapped his kid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, the good news is now we know a lot about Ren, the very important character who will be with us for like a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm glad
yeah.
we took this moment to really establish and ground what Ren means to the story.
Yeah, and how she's sure. connected yeah, to yeah. Lady Gaga, which is very important. But this is all good and whatnot, but we have to remember, because the show keeps forgetting that like John isn't the audience. So John doesn't know jack or shit about vampires or Lady Gaga. He's never talked to Lady Gaga. He only knows there's ghosts in the hotel, and he doesn't even really believe in that. So he doesn't know jack or shit about vampires, and he doesn't really understand that the kid is a vampire or Lady Gaga is a vampire, and he doesn't know anything about that. The show keeps forgetting that, but
I want the scene, though, where he goes back and talks to Kathy Bates, like, you didn't tell me about the vampires at all. And she's like, look, man, like, I didn't think we had that much time, but there's a lot here.
She's okay, like, I didn't think you'd be involved in that plot. And then your fucked up wife showed up, and then it became a whole thing. I only thought you needed to know about the ghosts because you were doing detective stuff here. You really got more tied up in this than I thought. And then John's like, I'm not even going to try and figure out how you're still alive from 1986 and you're only still 10 years old. Or do I care about Lady Gaga? Can you tell me where the Ten Commandments killer is? That's all I care about. And then she's like, nope. And he's like, well, what if I break you out? And she's like, okay, that's fine. Yeah, that's good.
Good enough.
And I'm like, you literally killed that security guard, allegedly, in that last murder so that the Ten Commandments killer wouldn't get caught, which also had nothing to do with your flashback, by the way, so I understand why John's confused. Why would you just change your mind now? Whatever. So we're going to take a brief reprieve from that story, which will have a very funny conclusion when we get to it, so don't worry. We're going to go back to the Hotel Cortez. The zombies are finally revealed after they've eaten Marcy. It's finally, like, fully revealed because they look kind of a little bit normal now that it's Natasha and Valentino, her paramours from before. They had just been, like, cordoned off in the fake hotel area, and they had been eating rats the whole time, which is, I guess they threw that in there to explain why they weren't, like, dead. And I'm like, so, like, regular hunger can kill you as a vampire?
Do I have to mention what movie that's taken from? Eating rats, drinking rats' blood in a pinch?
Don't think they've ever done that slow beef, but please, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying, because, you know, there's a big thing in an Interview with the Vampire. Like, if you need a quick fix, you can drink animal blood, but it's not going to, like, keep you totally sustained or anything. But, you know, that kind of deal. And that's how Lestat survived the whole thing.
Who put the rats in there? Because it was, like, sealed off, right? Like, rats aren't magic. If it's sealed, it's sealed. The rats won't, like, teleport.
I will have you know I've watched the movie Ratatouille a few times. Rats are magic, okay?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right. I didn't think about... Anybody. What if it was... Oh, that's... You know what? They were stupid. They kept drinking the rat's blood. They should have taught the rats to make a delicious plate of French cuisine. Yeah. You're
or
right.
Or bring them food. They should have taught the rats to bring them food. Also, like... I don't know. I feel like if I was boarded up in a trap for 90 years and I saw that rats kept coming in, I would figure out where the rats were coming in from and then work with that. Because otherwise, why? What else are you going to do with 90 years of being immortal and nothing to do with that time? I don't know.
Go crazy, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, they do, kind of. They, like, are, like, yelling at each other. They're, like, now very bitchy towards one another about being put in the walls, which feels like a conversation that would have happened previously in the 90 years leading up to this point, not right now in the current day. And then they're like, oh, well, we should have... Well, we're not, like, totally back to normal. We gotta drink more blood. And I'm like, you left so much fucking blood in those two people you killed, in the workers that you killed, and Marcy. Like, what do you mean you need more blood? You like, drank, like, a cup of blood from each of those people, and then you left the rest of it on the floor and, like, in their bodies. So what do you mean you need more blood? Just go... Is it because they're dead now? Is there, like, a brief, like, grace period after you rip their throat out when, like, that's the only time that you get to drink it? I don't understand. They just need to make a conflict for this show of everybody needs different blood than the blood that they have access to, even though it's clear that you can pretty much drink fucking any blood and it's fine. Maybe not great, but it's at the minimum fine and it will keep you alive. Then three jacked Australian people show up. That's not a joke. They do. Three jacked Australian men show up.
This is the worst scene. This is like, because it's just like, howdy, mate. Like, one of them is actually wearing a Crocodile Dundee style hat, you know? And it's like, what the hell? This hotel only has one bed with strippers. And that's like all you get for their like whole like anything. And then it's like, well, let's get eaten by vampires. And they do. The end. Like, what the hell did we need this for?
Someone in the writer's room thought that was a hilarious bit. They're like, what if three Australian strippers show up? And then we get to have those guys as ghosts later. Because the vampires are going to eat them. Would that be funny or what?
Me only regrets not seeing another wallaby. Like, it's, like, horrible. I can't.
We haven't ripped off Magic Mike yet. Time to rip off horror classic Magic Mike. Magic Mike Down Under. Wasn't there an Australian Magic Mike? I don't remember. Anyway, there's three Australian guys.
Yeah, Magic Moike.
Magic Moike.
Moike.
Yeah. and they get eaten, which, as we've established, the vampire virus doesn't make you super strong or fast or, like, give you fangs even. So I don't know how they managed to kill those three pretty strong-looking Australian men as two kind of feeble-looking vampires that have been cooped up for 90 years and aren't back at, like, full capacity with no weapons either. But they do, and they chug-jug off of the three Australian men. And then elsewhere, we check back in with James March, who's being served a Wellington by Miss Evers. I guess Lady Gaga has worked out a custody agreement with James March, where, like, she gets to live here, and once a month they have a date night where she tolerates him. And that's what they're doing. And they're having their once a month date night where she tolerates him. And she's like, hey, well, you're enjoying your Wellington because I guess ghosts eat real food for some reason. I'm going to marry Will Drake. And then James March calls him the oldest old timey slur for gay people there is. If you're enjoying this podcast and are interested in supporting us or having access to additional bonus episodes, consider subscribing to our Patreon over at patreon.com/greatandterribleahs. Supporters who pledge $5 or more a month will get access to our monthly Patreon exclusive episode in which we discuss various American Horror Story spinoffs, such as American Horror Stories. Thank you again for listening, and we hope to see you around next week.
Which this show loves to do. This show loves making me do risky Google searches for, is this a slur or not? This one was. I don't even remember what it was, but think of the goofiest shit you could possibly think of, and it was that.
I remember, and it's like one of those where it, like, toes the line of so goofy that if someone said it, like, with hate in their heart, you'd still be like, are you sure? Are you a clown?
Like, I think that fella ties his shoes with his left hand. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what do you mean? Like, what the fuck are you saying? It's something like that. And then he's like, well, when you murder him off property so he's not a ghost here. And then we get another fucking flashback in this episode of James March being like, I'm gonna trap my wife's two lovers in the walls. And he does by, like, drugging them and then putting them in the walls. And then we get a sequence of Rudy and Natasha, like, waking up and realizing that they have been trapped in this, like, fake hotel floor, and that they're trapped in there forever. And I'm like, that is an effective, like, trope of horror of, oh shit, we're gonna die slowly and of starvation in here, but they're vampires, so obviously I guess it's different. But, like, that's an effective, like, horror thing, that claustrophobic feeling of, like, being entombed forever and knowing that the way you're going to die is starvation, and that no one will ever find you. That's a genuinely horrific thing that they are going to do nothing with at all, period. And then,
yeah, it's like a pretty awful idea of being trapped in a tiny room, like, you know, the classic Cask of Amontillado, except, like, you're alive for all of it forever. But instead, yeah, they're just like, He's like, I'm sick of those guys. Put them in the hole, boys. And then they just put them in the hole and then they forget about it. Like, there's no drama to it. He just kind of like puts them back there and he's like, well, done and dusted. See you never. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, man. Don't have to worry about those guys. I don't think he even knows they're vampires unless he sat there and listened to like the whole deal, listened to the whole spiel that like Lady Gaga provided. Like, I don't think that he would know that like they were going to be immortal in there. And if he did, he really kind of like learned about vampires and got real cool with it real quickly. He's like, oh yes, vampires are real. And my wife was banging two of them. And then was just like, I'm never going to bring that up again. And I guess that's what we're meant to glean from that. Anyway, so they were in there.
Yeah, guy who is obsessed with outclassing God, not interested in immortality.
Yeah,
seems
not
off.
Interested in immortality even a little bit, or the concept of that his wife that he is lying to is a vampire and could make him immortal. I guess maybe he's a ghost already, but then that wouldn't explain. No, because he left the hotel to be there. I don't know, and I don't care, frankly. We're back in the present time where she's having her date with James March, and she has, remember in the last episode how I was complaining about her fuck ass eyebrows that they didn't do anything about? They must have shot this all in the same day, because she now has the fuck ass eyebrows in current present day. So like, they literally must have just shot this all in the same day and been like, no one will notice that she's got the 1920s eyebrow from the what we just shot most of the feedback, like the, not the feedback, but the flashback.
Except they weren't expecting beloved makeup influencer Miss Shadow Lovely to get their fucking ass.
To notice, because it's not like, when I say fuck ass eyebrows, I don't mean like, oh, they did her eyebrows bad. They did her eyebrows bad, but they were like 1920s.
She has three.
But she has fucking three eyebrows. So they did the 1920s eyebrows bad, and she has three fucking eyebrows because they didn't do anything about one of her blonde ass eyebrows. And then they didn't bother wiping off the 1920s eyebrows for the rest of the episode. So now in 2015 or whenever this is supposed to be, she just has the fuck ass 20s eyebrows on top and
she's
has the
dual wielding.
And she has the third eyebrow again, which she didn't have at the start of the episode. So it's not like this is her look all the time. This is clearly a mistake that really bothered me specifically, Miss Shadow Lovely. And she has the fuck-ass eyebrows, and then now Valentino and Natasha come downstairs in the Hotel Cortez, and they're normal people again. They're all fed up because they sucked on a bunch of Australian guys.
And this is why we had to kill Tristan, so that it's not confusing at all to anyone. And if you missed this episode and you're like, oh, Tristan's back to life, that's too bad. That's your fault for missing an episode.
Yeah.
Because, he's just the same guy. When I'm watching the next episode, if this clown's involved in any way, shape, or form, I'm going to try and analyze it pretending I don't know they're different guys and see if I could conflate that it's still Tristan.
The false
and like,
Tristan.
Oh, you got a weird... Yeah. Oh, Tristan got a weird girlfriend. Okay, cool. Good for him.
Tristan got a weird girlfriend and also isn't at all interested in Liz Taylor anymore or Lady Gaga. This is so strange. And then so elsewhere, we're going to circle back to the Rin and John situation. And they're walking outside of the hospital. Where they have broken Rin out of the mental ward. It doesn't explain how he did this, by the way. They're just like, trust us.
Probably walked out.
Yeah.
My guess would be he walked out because it's a regular hospital and they don't, like, secure you generally. Well, like, you can just be like, oh, hey, we're going. Or, like, run.
I guess
you
mostly
know?
I'm just like, he did knock out a guard. You'd think that they would have, like, check-ins every so often. And if a guard didn't answer, that they might be like, oh, shit, the restricted ward. Person, we should maybe check on that. They don't,
Or just like someone would walk by and be like, oh no, someone's unconscious in a hospital. We should like help them because we're a hospital. And that's what we do when we find someone who's sick or injured.
Yeah. And so they're just like walking along the sidewalk and he's like, okay, now that I've broken you out of the hospital, where are we going? We're going to your house, right? And she's like, no. And he's like, okay, well, where are we going? And she's like, the Hotel Cortez. And he's like, why? And she's like, I'm not gonna answer that. Also, I've stopped walking. What do you think I'm gonna do next? Go ahead, audience. Take a wild guess. I want you to just like,
you're not gonna guess.
I want
this.
You to sit with yourself for a second, and given all the information that we've learned about Ren over the last 20 minutes or so, and that she's definitely a vampire, and that she lives with Lady Gaga, and like has been very apparently quite influential in the Ten Commandments killings up until now, and has decided to made John break her out of this hospital.
You know, what's crazy is she is maybe the only actual extant tie between Lady Gaga and the Ten Commandments killer, because Alex has now divorced John, so like there's not really a link between these events other than Ren, which thank God Ren's here.
Okay, audience, now that you've kind of mulled over all of the possibilities and what you think this might culminate to, what she might end up contributing to the plot, Ty, would you like to tell the audience what Ren does?
She gets hit by a truck. She gets hit by a big truck. A big truck comes from off screen and fucking kills her. And it's like four frames.
Yeah.
It is legitimately like her just being like, oh, sorry, John, one sec. Hup, 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 bam.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, come on. No, no. It's so funny. It's legitimately like so. It's like an I think you should leave like ending card bit. It's so good. It's so good.
And like to be clear, to make it so crystal clear, she does it on purpose. She's not just like final destinationed by a truck. She is like, goodbye, John. And then runs out in front of this truck that's doing 80 in a residential area in front of a hospital for some reason.
That's the other thing that's wild is, this truck is moving, bro. This truck is hitting 100 miles an hour, apparently, right outside of a hospital, which famously high-speed zones right around hospitals. And, she's just like, hey, John, so about me telling you anything. Oh, weird, my ride's here. Just like jumps into the front of a semi.
She reverse isekais herself and is like, I'm leaving now, goodbye. Which is so funny.
Getting out of this show and into any other show, see you.
Which is like, it's really funny because like that would maybe be like a reasonable reaction if like she was under duress and like John had kept like pressing her for info and like she's like, oh no, he's gonna find out. He's gonna find out. I have to protect this information. Oh no. But she's just like, okay, yeah, break me out and I'll help you. And then they start walking and she's like, actually, I've decided truck. And then she gets isekai'd by getting hit by a speeding 18-wheeler randomly out of nowhere. And John's like, no, she was the one who was feeding my addiction into knowing who the Ten Commandments killer is because I'm such a good detective or whatever. This sucks. That's where the episode ends, which is hilarious.
The end of the episode is legitimately just a child backdashing into a semi.
On purpose, because she hates John so much.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, John, do you happen to have I've met your son. Do you have a daughter? Oh, Scarlett's your daughter. Oh, I'll see you later. I got a truck to meet. I gotta go.
Yeah, you clearly already have a daughter position filled, so I'll just let you worry about her.
Also, your daughter sucks so much. I would rather die than be associated with Scarlett in any way. Bye.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, all that Ren stuff was kind of for fucking nothing, frankly.
Ren Herring, perhaps.
And now that Lady Gaga's down a kid, that seems like it might be important, but who could say?
Yeah, for the character who, that's like her whole, ostensibly her whole thing, that and the weird baby, whatever. Well, we'll catch you all next time for season 5, episode 8. The Hotel, Ten Commandments Killer.
Yes, we finally...
Which I guess means we care about that plot again.
And we finally get our traditional episode where they put the name of the season in the episode title for some fucking reason. So it's season 5, episode 8 of American Horror Story Hotel, The Hotel, Ten Commandments Killer. Let's go! Love when they do this. It's my favorite. I love when they do the double subtitle thing for some reason every season. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, see you next week.
So yeah, see you next time, everybody. Yeah, for Great and Terrible AH, Great and the GAT, Great and Terrible AHS American Horror Story. We'll see you next time. Have a good one. Bye.